Synthaholics. Aaron's back from his Section 31 mission.
Hello. And,
hey.
I'm back.
How'd that go?
I killed everybody.
They're all dead.
They're all dead.
And now you have to kill me since you told me.
Yes, you're next.
And then we have got Holly Michelle.
Hello.
We're all here. So we got some news this week. We didn't have any news the last couple weeks, it seems like.
Yeah, a couple things shook loose. One just came over.
Dingleberry.
To Dingleberry shake loose. Michael Dorn said that he was speaking to Inverse, and he basically said that he's only interested to reprise the role of Worf if the character was a major part of the show or had some meaning, something meaningful for it, and he's not just going to show up to beat somebody up and then go home.
I feel like Michael Dorn is hilarious because I'm pretty sure he lost to everybody in Next Gen.
He lost a lot.
He lost that nanny that turned to a Wookiee. He lost to a blue barrel. He couldn't even convince his son or Riker to kill him. He's not very good at things.
Oh, man.
Although, to be fair, he did kind of redeem himself a little bit in DS9, where he did win like 16 fights against the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, but then again, he's beating up on 2-year-olds, so.
Well, they're tough 2-year-olds.
Yes.
Very tough.
They're very tough 2-year-olds.
Yeah, and as we know, like, Michael Dorn for a while was around pitching a Worf series way before Discovery ever came. Was even like a twinkle in anybody's eye.
Well, this is like before, I think even before the that fan film, before Axanar for sure, before they were talking about Axanar, he was talking about that for a long time.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I mean. It's like he was trying to get his character put back on screen, but maybe now he sees it's a possibility. And I don't know, maybe he's just, you know, he wants to do it on his own terms. So,
I mean, since we've seen that they want to, you know, cast Michelle Yeoh into a spinoff Section 31 series.
Hey, don't knock those people. Section 31 kills a lot of bad people, Dave.
Well, sure. I'm not knocking anything. I'm just saying since Michael Dorn is observant.
Don't you question the way we do our things, our modus operandi.
I'm not. I'm just trying to say Michael Dorn might be noticing that there might be a spinoff show, and so maybe he can be the spinoff show from the Picard show.
So many spinoffs.
We're spinning off of spinoffs.
That would be a little much.
Well, they're talking about having a Star Trek show around the year on CBS All Access. They need 16 shows when the shows are only like 15 or less episodes apiece. Got to have a bunch of shows. So there's 52 weeks in a year.
There you go.
So, you gotta have at least 5 shows for them to be playing year round. As long as the shows are more than 10 episodes.
Gotta have that track.
Gotta have that. We'll have it for at least 5 years, as long as that they keep Michael Kurtzman employed, I suppose, since he's the gatekeeper. Which,
yeah.
After we saw Star Trek 2009 again, we were like, oh, he's the gatekeeper.
Just words, Dave. Well, getting into all that with Kurtzman and the reboot of the J.J. verse Kelvin timeline, there was an interesting interview at Midnight's Edge, the YouTube channel, who interviewed Nicholas Meyers. Nicholas Meyers is the writer-director of Wrath of Khan. He also was a writer in Star Trek IV, Voyage Home, and he also directed Undiscovered Country.
He was also a producer on Discovery season 1 for the first half, but he's not involved with season 2 at all.
Yes, and he was tapped to write a series on Khan, Noonien, Singh, which some reason has not we've not seen any traction on that whatsoever. So regarding the Khan series, Nicholas Meyer said that he wrote a three-part series on Khan for CBS. He wrote a treatment, and he has not heard back about it since then. Mm-hmm. And he says it's been a while, and he doesn't know what's going to come of it. But, you know, he seems like a very busy guy anyways, so he's always got something working. So we don't know what's going to happen with that.
Busy writing more treatments that no one will look at.
Right. So, we know it's written then. I mean, whether it's the, you know, whatever he wrote, if it ever comes, gets made into anything, doesn't mean it won't get made. Maybe they're just waiting for it to be the proper time to release it. So,
yeah,
maybe. I thought I saw something. Maybe they had a name for the show. Let me look that up real quick.
Khan.
I think it was
called SETI Alpha something, or yeah. I can't quite remember. But it, so I'm assuming it must be his time on SETI Alpha 6, but who knows? The other interesting things that he did talk about was, one, besides, I mean, they get into a lot of his older work, too. So he wrote a bunch of books as well before he got into directing. He wrote some books on Sherlock Holmes. He did they asked him about how he felt about Into Darkness compared to Wrath of Khan. And the thing he said is that they did feel that there was like an homage that was kind of like going back to Wrath of Khan, and he felt flattered at some points. But then he said they didn't really add anything to it. You know, you just kind of mimed what I did, and that was about it. And you just changed the words, you know, from different people, and you kind of, you know, move things. You shuffle the pieces around, but you didn't really make it anything better or worse. And he says that, you know, it was kind of weak on that standpoint. So I guess he felt flattered for the fact that they tapped his ideas, but he didn't think they added anything to it.
It was lazily tapped, and they only did it for the last couple minutes of the film. The reason they made the reboots was so they could do something original, and then they started to do something original with Into Darkness, and then they're like, oh crap, we gotta do something people recognize. Hey, let's just copy Wrath of Khan for the last 15 minutes of the film. Thanks. We didn't need that. Yeah. They could have done so much. They could have turned Khan into a good guy. They could have, like, done other things. I mean, like, make, you know, just 100% straight up made Marcus the bad guy, and then made Khan maybe not such a bad guy. I don't know. They could have done something different. Could have, you know, subverted our expectations. But no, they just did something we've seen before.
Yeah, I don't know. I think anybody who listens to this podcast knows how I feel. I think Into Darkness is beautiful film looking, well shot, and it's the first, you know, half of the movie is really entertaining. I just got disappointed more and more as it, you know, wrapped itself up. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It starts off great in the last couple of minutes. You're just like, what the fuck were you doing? It's kind of like Threshold, where Threshold, the first, you know, 3/4 of it's not bad until they like, then they're like, oh, that's what you're going for? Oh, that was lame. And those last couple of minutes ruined the entire episode. Yeah.
Well, and then lastly, they just asked him kind of like off the cuff, like when he wrote The Voyage Home, he remember there's a whole scene where they're going double dumbass on you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the colorful metaphors during this time of the century, how people swear all the time. And he, you know, he says, and what do you think about Discovery using like dropping the F-bomb? And he just, I mean, he didn't have like a huge problem with it. But he basically said that, you know, it's art that's a product of its time when it was created. And he says, you know, we have to kind of put in context when the art is created. It was interesting, his response to it. It's worth listening if you get a chance to. It's a long interview. I think it's about an hour long. Which is amazing that they could talk to him that long. And he talks about lots of other things than just Star Trek. But yeah, it's worth you know, taking your time and listening if you have time to do it. So.
And where can you find it again?
It's the YouTube has the Midnight. It's called Midnight Edge, and it's, you know, just a interview with Nicholas Meyers. I mean, they have they talk a lot about Discovery as well. So, but it's not Dave's favorite channel. So
no, I feel like they spread misinformation or willfully just mislead people. So I'm just like, not the biggest fan of them.
Mm. Well, anyway, so that's it for news. But this episode, we are talking about the Star Trek Enterprise the last episode of season two, The Expanse.
So what we were talking about is, like, we all kind of, like, get upset when we have to talk about Enterprise a little bit, because we're not sure what to talk about with Enterprise, because we've hit a lot of the really good episodes. And so my thought was that, hey, let's not think about Enterprise for a really long time. Let's just, when it's time to do Enterprise, let's just pick up on the next episode of the season three arc. And the season three arc starts in the last episode of season two and it ends in the first episode of season four. So it's going to start off with this and it's going to end up with space Nazis.
Nice. Space Nazis.
Nazis in space, but on Earth. In the past, during World War II. And I'm not even joking, Holly, because Holly has not seen the show all the way through. So she thinks I'm joking, probably. No. This starts with this. This episode we saw.
I actually looked into, I was curious about the timeline. So I actually read a little bit about it. So I know you're not lying. it does seem a little outlandish, but no.
It starts here, ends with space Nazis.
So we go back to dial it back to season two. So this is Star Trek Enterprise, season two, episode 26, first aired May 21st, 2003. And the show opens up with a probe like weapon, and it's just like a big ball.
It's the Death Star.
It's a tiny Death Star, and it just shoots onto planet Earth.
It's the Death Pimple.
And it just cuts right into Florida and into the Gulf of Mexico. And it looks like it starts going into South America.
And it ends at Venezuela.
Venezuela killed all those communists.
Oh, yes.
Anyways, and then when the probe is done shooting, it just falls into Earth's atmosphere to self-destruct.
I thought this was interesting because at this point, the death toll keeps going on up and up and up. And they say, I think it was was it 5 or 7 million people that they say were dead in that one swath?
Yeah.
I forgot the final count.
I think it was 7.
Yeah,
it's between 4 and 7 million. And I'm just
I think when you first hear about it, they say they're guessing 3, and then it comes to when they get the actual count, it's around 7.
So aren't we only 100 or 200 years from World War III? Is that enough time to populate the Earth that much? Because I thought the whole point of World War III was they wiped out most of the population. That's how Zefram Cochrane was so easily able to get the stuff to make a warp drive ship, since it's there's not much competition for resources and stuff anymore.
I don't know.
Seems like a lot of people to be in that one little stretch and after only 200 years have passed. Although I know we don't have any exact numbers on population, it just does seem like a lot. And I think it's only been 200 years since Zefram Cochrane, if that.
The destruction was quite wide. So depending on what part of Florida, I mean, Florida is pretty long, depending on what part of Florida it started at. I mean,
and there's a lot of population in Florida, too.
Yeah.
But the World War III knocked out 90% of the world's population.
We don't know that. It could have all happened in Asia.
Maybe. And I guess Asia does have 90% of the world's population.
Yeah, we just don't know. Maybe. So, the show then jumps to the Klingon High Council, which is
the Klingon Senate.
The Klingon Senate, and Klingon Chancellor is very angry at Duras for allowing Captain Archer to escape from his imprisonment on two different times, and is basically his failure to, hold on to Archer. And he says that Duras has dishonored the Klingon Empire. And he says, you got basically one last chance to get Archer back.
Right.
And Duras says, don't worry, I'll do it. I kind of feel like the whole Klingon section of this is just to push him along a little faster. Because there's really no sense of him having this,
Yeah, it's just kind of there for padding, I feel like. It doesn't really accent the episode at all. It's like, we got to get them to the Expanse, so let's make it a little bit more exciting instead of them just going to the Expanse. They're just trying to raise the stakes a little bit, I think.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the rest of this storyline, but I was thinking that perhaps, how they lose some of their weapons that they armed themselves with before going into the Expanse. I've assumed it would come into play later that they would have had the right tools if they weren't attacked by him.
Oh, maybe it does. And actually, another reason I wanted to do this was because this whole going straight through season three, it's because a lot of people really hate Enterprise for season three. And since this will be Holly's first jump through, we'll see how she feels after seeing the entire season three all the way through.
You know what's funny is that I had actually already watched half of this episode. I went and rewatched it, but I was watching Enterprise a while ago, I guess, and I just stopped on this episode.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. I don't remember making that conscious decision, like, oh, I'm done with Enterprise, but, you know, that song will get you.
How fortuitous.
God damn.
It's been a long time getting from there. And in season three, like, they remix it, so it sounds even worse.
You know, it's like, it's probably not a terrible song, but when you're looking at space
stuff
and you're talking about interstellar travel and stuff, like
the grandeur of discovery and exploration. You don't want to hear some yokel singing about a long time here or there. It's like you're driving, you know, to Kansas City or something like that.
From Buffalo, right. Yeah, yeah. It's just too pop sounding for. It's not grandiose. It should have just been a good instrumental, like all Star Trek has always ever been.
Right.
So the next scene comes in on the Enterprise. Archer has to tell a senior staff that the probe attacked Earth, and it cut a swath of 4,000 kilometers between Florida and Venezuela, and that the Enterprise has been recalled to Starfleet Command. And
it should have just drawn a big dick.
Or maybe a big smiley face or something like that.
You know, something. Like, that would have been great.
That would have been probably a little more interesting. Anyways.
It draws the balls around the Gulf of Mexico. And I'm like, oh, man. Just carves a dick all the way up the U.S. and the Canada. That'd be great. That'd be hilarious.
You guys are dicks. So the journey back to Earth is going to be long. Apparently it's going to take them a little bit to get back since they're so far in space.
It's been a long time. No, I'm sorry.
So, what's his name? Trip is worried about his sister Elizabeth. She lives down in Florida, and Archer doesn't have any real information yet about what part of Florida was hit. So he's very concerned if his sister was killed during the attack. And next, we get T'Pol has a Vulcan transport found a pod from the alien probe in the central of Asia, and they're bringing it to Starfleet headquarters to be studied. So the probe at least can be identified and start to be, you know, cracked open and looked at. And I guess there's a pilot on this device.
A reptilian.
Right. So anyways, the officers start to talk about the situation when eight Suluban starships catch up on Enterprise at high warp, and they beam onto the bridge and they capture Captain Archer and they kidnap him off the Enterprise. This, a lot of things happen very quickly in the first couple, like 10 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
So they take him on the ship, and he gets his old arch nemesis, Silic. And Archer accuses him for attacking Earth, but Suluban says he doesn't know anything about that.
I don't know what you're talking about. Silly boy.
He takes Captain Archer to his leader, and it's a man from the future, David.
It's Jonathan Archer.
Yes, but we don't know that.
You know, it's so funny because I read what they, you know, decided about that person. But he looks like Archer, but then he also, I was like, well, maybe he's Klingon. And because, you know, that one guy was the guy that posed as the physician, the not Klingon, Vulcan.
Oh, right. The ambassador?
The one that the doctor, actually, who was like, some of us do believe in time travel.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was trying to think, I'm like, man, does he sound like him or not? But then I saw that they announced that it was Archer from the future or whatever. But he definitely, like, the silhouette was basically the same person. So.
Yeah. And
it's never revealed in the series. I'm so sad it wasn't. That would have been such a fun thing to find out.
Right.
So in this chamber, this shadowy figure tells the Archer that it's the Zindi who's attacking them. And they've been warned that in the future, their homeworld will be destroyed by humans 400 years in the future. And so Archer has to go and try to figure out a way to stop this powerful weapon from destroying Earth. So there you go. Dave, is this part of the temporal Cold War kind of thing?
I mean, kind of, but... Oh, yeah, it's definitely part of the temporal. It's got to be, because
I read that it was.
Because the Zendi got the information from the future. So this is part of the Temporal Cold War. Yeah, it definitely is. Because I remember in a future episode, the guy takes him to the ugly Enterprise J.
Oh, it's the worst Enterprise.
Fucking ugly ship. It's so ugly.
Yeah, it looks like someone took a rubber band and stretched it around a plate or something like that. I can't.
It looks like a it's a giant, but it basically just looks like a more futuristic version of Enterprise from NX-01, but it's all flat and stretched out, and like people have done size comparisons, and it's like 10 times bigger than a Galaxy class ship. I'm like, it's so ugly and stretched out looking.
Yeah, it's pretty weird looking. So this figure is kind of like giving this ominous warning about the future, and Captain Archer has to stop this. Captain Archer is then returned back to the Enterprise, and he tells T'Pol and the rest of the crew basically the story. And then, you know, T'Pol completely is skeptical, and Archer even yells at him, just, "Could you just believe me and not you? I can not use your Vulcan skepticism for once or something."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I noticed that Archer from this show Ford turns into a giant dickhead. He really does. I mean, like, before he was, like, you know, exuberant and happy to be the explorer, and now he's just kind of like, fuck everybody.
But doesn't he get kidnapped a lot?
He does.
I'd be pretty mad, too. I'd get pretty...
Yeah, he is.
Edgy.
Yeah, it's like, come on, people! Just want to make a friend.
We just want to have fun. We don't want to do war.
They get back to Earth space when they're attacked by a Klingon bird of prey, which is commanded by Duras.
Grumpy pants.
Gold grumpy pants Duras. And so they start, they're getting beat up, but then Enterprise gets their ass saved by the rest of the Federation fleet.
The one time the Earth has other Federation ships around it. Any other time in Star Trek history, the Enterprise is the only one.
Yeah, it is. But it was actually, I'm glad to see other ships help out the Enterprise. It's always the Enterprise chasing after somebody and helping them. So
this was a nice juxtaposition. This should happen more often. The Enterprise should not always be the only ship in the vicinity. Also, this one scene where Duras by himself pretty much goes to human space, this just adds fuel to my flame for my complaints about the end of Discovery. Whereas, like, why would they pull off? Klingons are too hard-headed. They were in Earth space, basically, and they just turned around because supposedly there was a bomb on Kronos.
Yeah. Well, he did. I mean, he turned tail and ran, and he basically, he just... he realized he was outmatched. I mean, it was even, not counting Enterprise, there was three other ships there that were attacking him. So.
Well, sure, but just the fact that, like, there was a whole fleet on the way to Earth and Discovery, and they just turned tail without a fight at all.
Oh.
That just rubs me the wrong way.
I don't know, it's your home world, man.
Yeah, but they didn't, like, Klingons are always like, give me proof, you know, there's no proof. I can, you know, I was like, I don't know. Klingons are hard-headed. Yeah. Maybe they're smarter back then, who knows?
Maybe. I don't think so. So Enterprise comes back to Earth, and they kind of go through what the alien probe has done, and they see through their, like, main view screen the destruction, and obviously Commander Tucker is just totally upset that his sister might have been killed. So back on Starfleet headquarters, Admiral Forrest and the Vulcan ambassador Savol are, you know, basically talking to Archer about this mysterious figure and how they don't believe him whatsoever. And that could be in anybody who's trying to tell him anything crazy, you know, some crazy story. And it is strange that Archer just totally believes this, like, future figure.
Well, he does give him some sort of proof, and he goes through this elaborate, long, drawn-out sequence of just scanning parts of the broken ship to make his point.
Well, they go to... he says that the Zindi's homeworld is in the Delphic Expanse, which is a dangerous region of space. I guess a lot of Vulcan ships have gone missing there. And Archer says it's sort of like the Earth's Bermuda Triangle. And it has a lot of hostile alien species and inexplicable phenomenon. From there, they still don't believe him. They think it's a crazy fool's errand, basically, to go after this. And this is where the captain decides that he's going to check out the wreckage of the alien probe. And he's going to prove that this shadowy figure from the future is telling the truth. And so he has a device that can take readings from the wreckage and to find out how old the material is. And so I think it's basically quantum dating. Is it quantum dating or is it atomic dating?
I think he said quantum dating.
So by doing this, he's, you know, like, this was made 20 years ago, this was made 5 years ago, so different pieces of the wreckage he's going through. And then he finds one that is that was made like negative.
negative 13 years ago.
Basically,
which would mean future, right?
Yeah, it comes from the future, so...
Right.
Actually, it wasn't. I don't think it was negative 30. I think it was negative like 400, 20 years ago.
Oh wow! Yeah, it was a long time.
So, so it kind of gives him the proof he needs and proof to Animal Forest, even though the Vulcans never believe the humans, no matter what.
They don't believe in time travel.
I really liked his response to the proof thing. What was it? It was like...
Oh, I guess the tricorder is broken, too.
What?
Oh, never mind. I thought it was saying, talking about the tricorder being broken.
No, he says, my lack of an alternative... Explanation does not prove your... You know, prove your hypothesis or whatever. I thought it was a really cool line.
It is an interesting line, and... To Vulcan's credit, they're not totally wrong for saying, like, I don't know if you should just believe some guy who says some crazy shit to you. I mean, they did kidnap you, so.
But they get assholes. Right. Then again, Vulcans are just major assholes, though, so it's kind of hard to.
They are. Yeah, they come off as assholes big time in Enterprise. So from there, Archer goes back to Enterprise, and this is where he goes to sick bay, and Dr. Phlox introduces him to this male Vulcan doctor, Ferrat, and the doctor wants to analyze Archer's exposure to the trace of some radiation found in the alien probe. Mm-hmm. And while he's doing that, he's asking him some like kind of probing questions about the
lots of psychological questions.
So yeah. During this time, Phlox is at his computer and he looks up the Vulcan database and he gets real angry because he finds that Ferrat, this Vulcan, is a psychiatric analyst and he's examining Archer's mental state. So he's trying to discredit Archer right there. So he gets pissed off and Archer basically and Phlox kicks him off the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So
Vulcans have medical ethics?
Apparently not.
Not only are they assholes, they don't have medical ethics either. Good for them.
So next scene, we have Tucker and Reed are down at Florida, and he's pointing out where everything was. And basically, his sister was right in the path of that destruction and said somebody would have heard something about Elizabeth's death. If she escaped, she would have called him and said that she's safe by now. So it was his baby sister. You know, obviously, Tucker is really torn up about his sister Elizabeth being killed by the attack. So that was kind of sad.
It was. And I think it was a good idea for them to put something like that in the show. You know, there's this big problem. And they put somebody who's one of the main characters of this series.
Raise the stakes.
Right in the center. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was smart.
And this episode and all of season 3 is their Star Trek Enterprise's take on 9/11.
Oh, absolutely. You can totally see it from it. You're like, this inexplicable attack comes out of nowhere. And you're just like, what the fuck? You know, so anyways, from there, Archer and Admiral Forrest are looking at the Columbia, saying that that's going to be ready to be built and should be out soon out of dry dock facility. And but he's hoping that Enterprise will be back to sea before the Columbia's launch in 14 months. And they kind of say their little goodbyes at the Enterprise when they delivers the captain to the Enterprise, and they're going to take off for the Delphic Expanse, and hopefully they'll have enough time to stop that weapon that's going to destroy Earth.
Right.
And Reed is super happy because they got photonic torpedoes.
Yes, the first time we get photon torpedoes,
and they're like the regular size ones instead of like the missiles that they used to be shooting out.
Right. And they're changing the tubes and all that shit. So they did a bunch of retrofits to make the Enterprise a little stronger.
Get the Enterprise tubes tied.
So then there's a discussion between T'Pol and Phlox about whether she's wants to. They're going to stay aboard the ship. And T'Pol has been recalled by the High Command, Vulcan High Command, and Phlox kind of says, "That's nonsense. You've defied the High Command before. This wouldn't be the first time you've done that." He says, "You just do what you think you need to do." And he says, "When Archer said that he needed me, and I saw what's going on," and he says, "More than ever, I need to be here." So T'Pol is basically, they're planning on dropping off T'Pol back on Vulcan. It's like a couple days out of their way, but it's not too far, you know, just to fly her back to Vulcan. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan right there. And like you said, they got the new photonic torpedoes and they're getting ready for, you know, getting the ship all set. Oh, and apparently just before they leave, Saval, the ambassador, shows Archer and T'Pol some disturbing imagery of
the Vulcan's gone wild.
Yeah, Vulcan's gone wild in space, where, you know, the Vulcan crew have some kind of space madness, not unlike the Event Horizon that we saw.
Yeah.
And they all go crazy.
Flashing people for beads.
Yeah, right, exactly. So the Enterprise is going to take off, and this is where they get attacked again by Duras. Yeah, and this time they have three ships, and they have to fly into this basically this huge cloud trying to separates the Delphic Expanse and regular space, and this is their kind of have like a nebula chase. And the other two,
they get scared and pull off because they get closer to the edge of the Delphic Expanse.
Yes, the other two Klingon ships scare away, but Duras can persist through chasing after him. Travis Mayweather has this crazy thing where he flies under a cloud and he flies back, basically does a U-turn right behind Duras and fires on him and blows him up.
Because they realize the shields are all four, and it's like, what's protecting his aft or stern or whatever? And they shoot him up the ass.
Yes.
Wrong hole. Boom.
So that's the end of that. And then they are going to move into this Delphic Expanse to see what happens, what adventures they get into, and if they can find the Zindi homeworld before they can create this super weapon to kill everybody on Earth. And that's where the show ends. David, you kind of picked this episode.
Oh, I just thought we'd make it easy for going forward. We don't have to think about picking Enterprise episodes. And this is, I didn't hate the Zindi arc. I thought it was not bad, but I mean, I guess we'll be able to reevaluate all of that as we go through it each time we pick Enterprise. So it'll probably take us a year to get through it or more. probably. But it'll just be, I think it'll be interesting to kind of go through it episode by episode and have something in order. Because, you know, we've got the Dax episodes are going through in order. We've got the Suffering O'Brien we're trying to go through. They've been not in perfect order, but, and we go through Discovery in order because that's, of course, a serialized show. And this is when Enterprise, we get super serialized. Super serial. Van Bear Pig.
Yes.
So I just thought that would be a good way of doing this season of Enterprise instead of just taking it random parts. And since the end of season 2 and beginning of season 4 are part of the arc, I might as well shuffle them in. So
right. Absolutely.
It's not super strong as far as season finales go. I mean, it's great. You've got that threat to Earth, and they cut that swath through it. But the Klingon subplot just seems like tacked on to add extra, I guess, drama to the episode, because I guess they just didn't have enough to make a full length episode.
Yeah, I just think they didn't need it. Honestly, I think you could have, you know, had more character development, and, you know, I guess there are some cut scenes from this episode too that we never got into because this episode ran too long. So
cut out the Klingon stuff. It's so unneeded. I don't remember it tying into anything else
other than, you know, the Duras
gets killed.
Gets killed and his character kind of gets wrapped up. Yeah.
But unfortunately, he has children that we do see
in the future. Yes, we do see them in the future, the Duras sisters.
It's always the Durases.
Right. Holly, any thoughts on your side, what you thought of this episode?
I didn't think it was bad. I was intrigued, so I ended up actually watching season 3, episode 1, and now I just can't decide if I want to
keep watching.
Well, if I want to watch them now, or if I want to wait and give, you know, unspoiled reactions the next time we do one.
Right.
I haven't decided.
I mean, it's totally up to you. Aaron and I have seen them, but
oh, I know.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, it's your take on it, and it's usually better to watch something more than once when we're going to do a podcast live, because me and Aaron can call upon our past viewings of it, whereas we watch it as a refresher. And if you're just like totally new, you may have more to say about it if you've seen it twice.
Yeah, it was interesting enough to where I'm curious about watching, you know. I think I'm just gonna watch it all. it was interesting, and granted there was a lot,
it was a packed episode, a lot of things happening very quickly.
It was very, I liked it.
Yeah, I think it might have been more effective as if they ran into some big problem at the very beginning of The Expanse, which I mean they may in the next episode, but I feel like they were trying to save the introduction to The Expanse for the first of the next season. So they needed to pad it out with this Klingon stuff, which, I mean, I don't hate the Klingons, but it's just kind of like, it just doesn't add anything to the flow of this episode.
It's
more like a distraction to what's going on in the episode rather than, than adding anything.
The Klingons don't add a lot, right?
I think I read that the writers weren't sure where they were going to actually take the season. So maybe they were just trying to keep their options open.
Maybe bring back the Klingons and chasing after them. So the next episode, I did watch ahead for a couple episodes. The next one is the Zindi. And it's basically this Trellium mine. Where they have to, there's like one Zindi guy working there with a bunch of other dickheads that are running it. And Zindi's like he's like a slave labor. Mm-hmm. And you see that Enterprise is trying to pull at clues at where the Zindis live, because it's obviously a huge part of space that they just know nothing about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. You know, it's I watched, I think, maybe about 3 or 4 episodes into season 3 after I watched this, just to kind of get myself reacquainted, because it's been a while. And, you know, I just don't like the Zindi. I don't think they're very interesting bad guys. And I think it's interesting that they have, like, all these different offshoots of their...
So many, like, species?
Yeah, yeah. That offshoot from them, but it's like... I don't know. It's like, all right, so there's an insect and a lizard version. Right?
But I feel like it's only interesting if they explain it.
They do a little bit. They get into basically that, you know, they evolved and they kind of went off in their own ways. And so they're from the same planet or whatever genotype, but they all, I think they even bring it up that because the one they find in the probe is a reptilian.
Right.
And the one
they're slightly find, different. Yeah.
Yeah. And the one they find later on, because the guy gives him a finger of one of the Zindi, and he's a humanoid. And they're like, it's sort of like the difference between us and Neanderthals kind of thing. So,
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I didn't watch ahead, so you guys are all a little further ahead of me, but I'm just recalling on way. I remember watching it in the past, and I remember not hating the Zindi as an arc. I liked the condensed storytelling, but then again, I haven't watched it in years, so my opinion may have changed as I've grown older. So who knows?
It's more too for me. It was that I when I watched these, I think I watched them when it came out originally. I maybe not caught all of them, but I caught a lot of them, and then rewatched them later on. It was more of a, it just drags on. There's so many episodes, and they're still hunting the Zindi and trying to find this ultimate weapon and stuff like it. There's interesting parts to it, but it's just too dragged out.
Like they should have done, like, had wrapped it up by the end of the first one, by the end of, like, the half the season, and then, like, had another story arc for the second half of the season.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes on for so long. Yeah.
Maybe that's what Discovery's doing, short seasons, because arcs that go too long might drag. Who knows?
Yeah, what, exactly.
Wasn't that, like, the whole point of Enterprise was to change up the formula?
It was.
With the writers and stuff?
Yeah, I think they were trying to tell. I mean, they were definitely telling episodic, but I mean, I think Deep Space Nine kind of did, you know, plowed that road for the Enterprise.
Yeah, they did. But the Deep Space Nine had a story arc that spanned pretty much season 3 to season 7, but they still had lots of episodic episodes mixed in with the story arc episodes. Kind of like Supernatural, because Supernatural is like really episodic. But then they'll have like a couple episodes at the beginning of the season and toward the end of the season that actually have something to do with the plot. And then all the middle episodes are just them doing whatever, barely referencing the main plot of whatever it's going on. It's kind of like that. That's how Deep Space Nine rolled. But Enterprise season 3, I think, is really strong arc all the way through. And I think that's maybe why it drags.
There are a couple
one-offs.
There's a couple. Yeah, there's one that I watched that I totally hated. I forgot though. It's the one where they get they get some pathogen, and they turn into a different race.
Oh, I don't even remember that one.
It's called Extinction. It's episode 3 of season 3. I want to freaking rip my eyes out of my head.
we'll be watching that in a couple months, probably.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, no. It'll be longer than a couple months because we've only got like. You know how we planned on doing the 200th episode? Well, Discovery is going to fall under the 200th episode, so we might have to push back the Trek Wars to like our anniversary episode. That is, if the anniversary episode isn't also a Discovery episode.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? Because the way I was counting the Saturdays, and I think Discovery starts around like 197, 199, 198, something like that. So Discovery will be starting, and it'll take – it's 12 episodes. So that pushes us until like April or May, I think.
Okay.
So, it'll push us out a little bit. So we might have to – and then that'll – actually, if it's April, that'll be beyond our anniversary date because our anniversary is end of March, beginning year 5.
Wow, it's crazy.
So like, I don't know. So we might have to do we might have to push back that episode beyond episode 200 because we'll be in the middle of Discovery coverage.
Mm-hmm. But getting back to the episode here that we were talking about, I don't hate this episode. I think the Klingon thing is just doesn't need to be there. It's just kind of silly. It's very interesting that they decide to take on the idea of 9/11 and everything.
So many years later.
That happened after. Well, if you think about it, I mean, you know, September 11th, 2001. And by the time it's been kind of figured out what, you know, everyone's got their head wrapped around it. You know, you could kind of tell a story a little better because I don't know how old you guys were, but, you know, I was in my 20s at that point. And, it was just shocking. Like, it was hard to get your brain around the whole thing. Like, what the hell just happened to us?
I was in college.
So it definitely has that callback to it. So and it's pointless deaths for no reason. And you don't know why they're attacking.
Episode has a lot of promise for stuff to come. It's an interesting premise, and it's a fun episode, and it does amazingly well at doing a whole lot in a very little amount of time.
Absolutely,
so much so that they have to fill up pointless time with Klingon stuff.
And like Holly said, I think it was excellent. They had Tripulu's a sister, so we have now a little like skin in the game now that you know he's got a vendetta that he wants to see something happen. and even mentions it to Archer at the very end of this episode. He says, we're not going to do any of this non-interference crap, right? We're going to actually kick some ass for once. And Archer kind of responds, we'll do what we have to do.
Right. Yeah, kill some Zindi.
And honestly, like I said, I jumped ahead like about five episodes into episode, season three. And Archer does turn into a totally different person. He turns into a raging dickhead. At one point, he tortures a pirate to get information from him and stuff like that. So these were all things that Archer would never do.
That's dark.
Yeah, he would never do these things in season one and leading into season two, but all of a sudden this happens and he just turns into a totally different person. Mm-hmm. And you get it. You don't blame him for being hostile and angry and wanting to, you know, extract justice or at least stop this super weapon from destroying Earth. But it seems like such a different person altogether.
He's also on a timetable.
Oh, I get that too.
So I mean, like, you know, it's desperate times call for desperate measures, and I think that's kind of the whole take on it, you know. And as Archer is sort of like the leader into this point, you gotta like take it in stride with, like, you know, how we reacted, you know, as a country. You know, he declared a war on the Middle East, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the war on Al-Qaeda, but I mean, like, it's who's Al-Qaeda? I mean, it's they're just people in different countries, and there's no border, you know?
Right, right.
At least with the Duffel Expanse, we got a border.
Exactly. Well, but that's the thing, they have technology that can come and attack us, so I don't know. It was an interesting thought and storytelling for especially that time period.
But since they don't know where Zindi is, it's also a needle in a haystack, so it's still sort of the same.
Well, finding Bin Laden was a needle in a haystack. Look how long it took him to find Bin Laden.
That's true.
You know?
That's true.
I mean, yeah. For years. I mean, that was one of the things that they used to say about George Bush. They used to, like, throw in his face, like, wow, how come you haven't caught Bin Laden yet? With the military and all the might of the U.S. Army and our armed forces, how come you couldn't find it? You know, obviously the guy was living in caves. He was, you know, he wasn't even in Afghanistan. He was in Pakistan when they found him. So it was really, it's difficult, you know, to find one guy. And not to mention, you know, like Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, all those guys. I mean, they're not a organized country. They're scattered throughout all parts of the earth. Mm-hmm. So extremely difficult to find.
Oh, yeah. When there's no border, it's just you're fighting random people and you don't know who's who. The lines are blurred, and that makes it very unfair.
It makes it unfair for
it's like, how do you innocence. How do you have a war whenever there's no clear enemy?
Right,
it's very,
right.
Very difficult and very scary.
Makes it very unfair for innocent people who basically don't have anything to do with any of that. And then, mm-hmm. you know, they get, you know, thrown in the crossfire and, you know, makes it unfair for, you know, troops, American, British, French, whoever was helping during that time period, you know, like they couldn't differentiate. So, yeah. And imagine Archer and his crew looking for a planet in a gigantic swath of space that nobody's unexplored. It's all this weird stuff's going on. And it's like, yeah, so it's gotta be even harder than finding Bin Laden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
space is much bigger than Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Yes, very much so. Anyways,
it'd be great if there's anywhere hiding in a cave though.
That's about the most interesting part I thought about this and how they wanted to go forward with this. But, I think they condensed a lot of story, but I think there's a lot more they could have done without the Klingon crap. I think they could have got into more character development and maybe some more nuances of the loss of life and the destruction. Even though they kind of go into it, they don't really get into it very heavily. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's well done. I mean, it's definitely a good episode. It's not awful, and it's got great promise for the season to come. And Aaron's already pulling his hair out from what he's seen of the next season.
Right. It's funny that that's your takeaway, but you also said that everybody hates this coming season.
a lot of people really either love the Zindi arc or you hated the Zindi arc. There's very people who are like, that was okay. I can tolerate it. People have very strong feelings on the arc, and I enjoyed it from what I remember. But then again, it's been 4 or 5 years since I've seen it all the way through.
I never was totally crazy about it. I mean, there's some cool episodes, don't get me wrong, and there's some interesting moments. It's just that I think it drags out too long. I think, like you said, Dave, they could have condensed it down to 5 episodes and then move on to another story arc.
Or like 15 and or 10 or whatever, however, split the season down the middle and do like 2 different arcs, especially with like the space Nazi thing. They could have done a whole bunch of episodes on space Nazis instead of just the one at the beginning of season 4, because that was kind of a fun thing. But I'm sure they also didn't know they were going to do space Nazis. It's just so funny that they go into these seasons, have no idea what they're going to do next. They just have to figure it out as they go. And it's just like, it's so funny thinking about that, looking back on that, because Holly, you were saying they had no idea what they're going to do. I'm like... And same thing with Discovery. They probably had no idea what they're going to do with season 2 either.
Right.
So it's so crazy. They go into these things and have like almost no plans.
Right. Exactly.
It just seems so unbelievable that they don't plan these things out from the get-go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also the case with Star Wars. There seems to be no plan for what's going on with Star Wars either. They're just kind of shooting at the hip.
The thing that I always get disappointed in more than anything is like, usually the actors and the people doing special effects and, you know, all the post-production and everything that goes involved in, you know, that's usually really top notch. It's the writing that suffers so much in most of the later stuff that I've been, like you mentioned Star Wars. I just think Star Wars suffered from just terrible writing, but same thing with the JJ stuff. You know, there's a lot of bad writing that goes into that kind of stuff. Yeah. It boggles my mind. It's like, come on, man. It's like everyone else is, you know, doing some amazing work. You know, if it's the actors, if it's this, you know, special effects, if it's, you know.
Yeah, it's the writers. And the thing is, the writers go on strike more than anybody, and their work doesn't get any better. In fact, it gets worse.
Yeah, it just frustrates me. So anyways, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we've had the discussion. We're like, you know, like at the beginning of the episode, we're talking about, you know, they just aped the parts of Wrath of Khan for the last 20 minutes of In the Darkness. And then we've had several discussions about how season 1 of Discovery was ripped off from Tardigrade, the game. Yeah. It's just there's plagiarism and lack of original ideas. And they go, the writers go on strike a lot, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's good to be the writers in the guild.
I guess. It's good to be the writers.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything else we want to say about this?
I'm good.
I don't remember the thinking that I had anything I really wanted to bring up. So you touched on most of the, you know, the stuff I remember. So
good.
Yeah.
Very good. But well, hopefully this will be a fun jaunt through Enterprise, and we won't have to think about it. When it's Enterprise, like, oh, yeah, we'll just do the next one.
Yeah, true.
So hopefully that'll be doing Enterprise easier going forward, or harder if we all hate the series.
It's funny, this Enterprise is like this, I just, besides season 4, I mean, I don't hate Enterprise, it's just like, I could take or leave it.
But season 4 is when it came into its own. It could be the best season of Star Trek ever, possibly, because there's so much great stuff in season 4.
Yeah, season 4 does get much better. And I just love the Andorians and the Tellarites and the Vulcans all coming together with the humans to form the Federation. So,
yeah, it's awesome. Except for the last episode being a holodeck episode from Next Gen.
I know.
that's the only misstep I think season 4 has. That, and they never went back to the temporal Cold War, and they never finished it, which was disappointing.
Well, what you gonna do? They canceled it.
Yeah, what a shame. And it was Les Moonves who was in charge of canceling the show.
Yeah, I know. And now he's out.
Thank CBS, God. So. Thank goodness. Hopefully, they get someone in who understands what Star Trek is and won't try to railroad it again.
Yeah, hopefully they get some guy who's not so grabby with the ladies, and.
No more hashtag me toos. We need some decent people.
Yeah, put a decent person in charge. Jesus Christ. And then, you know, hopefully it's somebody who enjoys sci-fi, maybe like Star Trek.
Yeah, keep Star Trek going.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
Get the Ronald D. Moore back. Put him co-in charge with Alex Kurtzman. At least I trust Ronald D. Moore way more than Kurtzman.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I'm sure none of that will happen.
Probably.
I'm sure there'll be another president or CEO, and he'll be just as grabby and just as much of an asshole. And
hate science fiction just as much as
Grossman. Hate science fiction, and Grossman will stay, and he'll muck things up even weirder. So
these are fun times we're living in, guys.
I'm pessimistic, to say the least.
I mean, it's like the golden age of Star Trek, because we've got a supposed 5 years, but it's just like, Alex Kurtzman, why are you the showrunner? Like, he's railroaded, like, several other, like, I think he single-handedly railroaded the Dark Universe for Universal and the Spider-Man Extended Universe with the Amazing Spider-Man movies. He, like, single-handedly railroaded these Expanded Universe ideas.
Yeah,
by trying too hard to do them. And now he's basically got full reign to do them with Star Trek. So I just hope he doesn't railroad these as well.
What it all comes down to is the profits, how much these guys can actually turn a profit on Discovery and whatever show comes after this or during this, you know. So,
and if you listen to Midnight's Edge, it's like they're not making any money, but there's got to be some money made if they signed over 5 years to Alex Kurtzman.
I know, but I'm hoping it's making some money, but I hope they have room for improvement.
I mean, I hope there's room for improvement too, but it just, the way Midnight's Edge reports it, it's like they're hemorrhaging money, not making any money. But if that was true, then why would they have signed over 5 years of Star Trek to a guy if it's not making any money?
Right. It is new, but we'll see.
We will see indeed. Well, our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes, and the rest of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. You can check it out on the internet at synthaholics.com. You can email us at Yahoo. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. And check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/synthaholics. On Twitter, you can find me personally at David_J_Duncan. Aaron can be found at Blackbird2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. That'd be wonderful. Leave us nice 5 stars, big juicy 5 stars. And maybe a nice comment. Also, please go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/synthaholics. Throw us a buck or two a month. It's more than you probably spend on coffee or fast food. It just helps keep the show going. So if you enjoy the show, enjoy the content, please consider giving to us to help us keep the show coming to you at warp speed. And as always, if you can't do any of those, if your pockets are drying up because of the
holiday season
and your fingers are broken and you can't leave us a review,
humbug.
Use your mouth and tell a friend. Tell somebody about Synthaholics. Let people know. Let your workmates, let your neighbor know. Let your landlady know about Synthaholics.
Tell your grandma.
Tell grandma. Tell whoever you like.
I mean, you'll be talking to your grandma more. It's the holiday season, so we might as well tell her at this point.
You might. You might, grandma. You might.
You know, at Thanksgiving, you should have been thankful for Synthaholics around the table.
When you were saying, that prayer around the table, you should have said, thanks, Synthaholics.
Thank you, God, for Synthaholics. Thank you for sending them to us in podcast form.
Oh, I thought they were praying to us.
Oh, no, I don't think they should pray to us. Well, I think they should thank God for us. That'd be great.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, it'd be fun to be deified.
I just don't know if we can do anything for them other than record more podcasts.
That's true. That's true.
you could tie this 10% to Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
Oh, man. But we only ask for a buck or two.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's a small pittance.
We don't need 10% of your pay. Just give us a buck or two. That's fine.
Yeah, no tithing. No tithing here.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Mix me a drink before the night's over. I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Woohoo! We did it. We did Enterprise. The redheaded stepchild of Star Trek.
What?
The redheaded stepchild of Star Trek.
Oh.
So what do you guys want to talk about next week?
Yeah, I listened to Annihilation. That was cool.
Was it okay?
Yeah, I liked it.
We thought we were kind of awkward because it was just like we didn't know the material nearly as well as we know Star Trek.
I know. know, that's how it always goes, though. You know, you just muddle your way through.
Event Horizon was good, though.
Yeah. Event Horizon was fun. But you guys did fine.
Well, what I really wanted to know your thoughts on Annihilation, by the way.
I think you guys hit on a lot of them. I think the one thing that I was thinking a lot during that was the idea of cancer and because she was a cancer researcher, and how cancer metastasized in cells. Mm-hmm. And that was the one thing I keep thinking, because somebody gave I can't remember how long back, it was quite a few years, somebody was giving an example of how cancer works. So when you start getting a tumor, basically your cell starts reproducing over and over again, and it's like a train track that starts missing some of the rail ties and some of the you know, the components that let the train go forward. And so mm-hmm. the more and more it goes faster, and the more it reproduces, it speeds up and it starts losing that DNA information, and it starts mutating into weird things. And that's when obviously you get tumors, like, you know, in your lymph nodes or
not
whatever.
A tumor.
Yeah, right. All that stuff. And that's what it reminded me of, because it seemed like these things were like almost like it's a very cancerous kind of side of it. Obviously, it was different because the shimmer was reflecting the DNA. And, you know, is it because, like, the bear ate the lady and somehow her voice box became part of his? I don't know how he learned speech patterns.
Right.
But maybe it became one with his. It fused with the bear's voice box. I mean, it's just weird stuff. I mean, it's obviously sci-fi, and they're just doing it to be creepy as shit.
And they succeeded.
Yeah, it was creepy as fuck. But, you know, same thing with the trees that were shaped as humans. Were they the humans that turned into trees, or were the trees that mixed with the human DNA? Like, we, you know, we don't really know, but that one girl, she turns into some kind of plant vegetation life. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things about that. But that was, I mean, I think you guys hit all the things. That was just the one thing that I was kind of fascinated with. But I don't think they really painted a very clear picture of that. Now, maybe the books tell you more. I don't know.